Hello, and welcome to The View From Here. This week, I'm in the centre of Wyndham by the Market Cross, and I'm with the MP for Mid-Norfolk, George Freeman. Thanks very much indeed for joining me.
Well, thank you for coming to the windy corner of Mid-Norfolk.
You said recently that rural voters feel very ignored. Why do you think that is?
Yes, I do think that, and I think it was a big part of the Brexit vote. It wasn't just a UKIP movement to dismantle the European project. The reason that 17 million people voted, I think, was that it tapped into a very deep sense of grievance, and particularly a rural grievance if you look at the geography of the Brexit vote. And it's because, I think, austerity has hit rural areas particularly hard. Small cuts to public services have a big impact in small villages and towns like here. My constituency has 115 villages and four market towns, of which Wyndham here is one. Public transport, services that county councils are really struggling to subsidise. If you close a bus service, you cut off an entire community. And many of our villages are seeing commuter housing, the closure of the local village shop and the pub. You know, those two alone can kill a whole community. And I think rural voters are also feeling like their values are under threat from an increasingly global and bureaucratic and London and Brussels-based approach to politics.
Some of the things that you talked about there, the loss of rural bus services, transport connections and so on. That is partly because of the austerity measures pursued by the government of which, for a time, you were a part of. The Conservative government has to take responsibility for that, doesn't it?
Well, yes, and I accept that. I would say we were clearing up the most unbelievable mess in the public finances, which most of my supporters here, voters here, understood. That debt had to be dismantled, and we had to get public spending under control. My criticism of our own government, actually, and of our own period in office, is that too many of the cuts came to local frontline services. Second point, rural areas get hit particularly hard because many of the indices that government use to allocate deprivation money tend to bias towards inner cities, flats, high ethnicity. This area is very white, very old, quite poor and very rural. That's a rural pathology. And also rural areas don't tend to complain. There's a sort of part of the rural spirit is, well, we never get our fair share, we just get on with it and help each other out. So I think, yes, in some ways the post-crash public spending pressure has affected it, and I wouldn't pretend otherwise. But I think we need to focus more on frontline services, back office cuts, but also recognise that in school funding, in so many of the local services funding, rural areas are underfunded.
You mentioned Brexit. It's a huge preoccupation at Westminster. Is it a preoccupation of your constituents too?
Hugely so. I mean, I was, at the time of the referendum, I was a business minister for the life science industry, and I felt very strongly we should remain. But I absolutely respect the outcome here. 60% of my constituents voted to leave. It's a relatively high leave vote. And my position has been consistently, we must honour that referendum result. That's a 48-52, quite a narrow vote, and we need to understand and respect the reasons people voted. And I just do not accept that that is a mandate for a UKIP-style, narrow, nationalistic, nostalgic backturn on Europe and the world. Well, most of my Leave voters here said to me, George, I voted to be in the common market, and I want to be in the common market, not in a political union. And that's why I'm backing EFTA, the European Free Trade Area. But I think also Brexit will be seen to be a hollow victory if we don't tackle those local issues that we've just talked about.
And what are the specific concerns? Are there specific aspects of our departure from the European Union that are going to have particular effects in places like this?
Yes, I'll give you three. Firstly, farming. This is a very rural agricultural area. Farming is our biggest industry. And if we have a no deal, it isn't just going to be quite difficult, quite awkward for holidaymakers. It'll be catastrophic for British farming. The head of the NFU, Minette Waters, yesterday, making very clear, Europe is a protectionist agricultural zone. 40% tariffs, 90% of British sheep and lamb meat exports go to Europe. They will be devastated. And this area does a lot of food processing and haulage. You can hear lorries going past. This area is a capital of haulage, food processing. It will be really hard hit by no deal.
And yet, so many of those farmers voted for Brexit, didn't they?
Yes. Interestingly, many of the people here who work on and depend on those jobs voted Brexit. That is awkward, because I have to respect the vote, but whilst also trying to honour and look after their life chances and their prosperity. And that's why I'm trying to fight for a departure from the political union, but keep us in the single market. At the other end of the economic spectrum, Norwich is booming, big capital of life sciences, food, medicine, energy research, all highly dependent on our membership of the European research community. And as Minister for Life Science, I've got a lot of investment into this area. If that is also hit, we risk becoming, as I've said publicly, a underfunded rural old people's home. And Norfolk is going to be the first county that has more pensioners than non-pensioners. If we don't get jobs here, we'll see commuter villages and lonely pensioners in dying communities.
And how much do you think this is feeding into people here feeling that despite that Brexit vote, or perhaps even because of it, they are still not being listened to at Westminster?
I think you're right. I think there's a very strong sense that in voting to leave, it was a surrogate vote for a whole raft of things. So people, A, want to see us leave, get on with it. B, they want to see us get on with the change that that was a request for. So I think they're in despair because they see endless bickering, party politics getting in the way of what was supposed to be a non-party vote. And they see no attention to the real underlying grievances, which is partly why I resigned from the government, because I felt we were taking the wrong approach. I think we should deliver a cross-party Brexit and use it as a moment of catalytic renewal of our domestic crusade, those burning injustices that the Prime Minister spoke of on the steps of number 10.
You represent tens of thousands of voters in rural towns and villages. Shouldn't people like you be doing a bit more to make sure that those constituents' concerns are properly listened to, are properly reflected in policy?
Well, yes, we all should. I don't think I can be accused of being asleep at the wheel. I mean, I'm doing everything I can. There's only so many hours in the day. I'm part of all the rural lobby groups in Parliament. But here locally, I've set up a project 10 years ago called the Norfolk Way to promote rural enterprise. We've launched a bursary scheme to give youngsters access to jobs. I've set up a skills project. I'm leading four town centre renewal projects. I've set up the Norfolk Enterprise Festival this year to champion the small businesses, the little businesses in all the towns and villages. I do take the challenge very seriously. I think if we don't deliver the change that people wanted, they'll say a plague on all of your families. And we'll see the rise of extreme politics in this country, extreme on the right and on the left.
And do you think there is a danger that at the moment, and probably for years to come, the whole Brexit process, which is preoccupying so much time of the government, the machinery of government, means that many of these more bread and butter issues that are affecting people in places like this are just getting overlooked?
Yes, I do. And that's why I'm so determined. We've got to get on with Brexit. If we can't find a Conservative Brexit that can get through the House, then a cross-party Brexit. I'm a leading member of the EFTA group, European Free Trade Area, which will give us access to the single market, out of the customs union. But mainly because we've got to get on and get back to those burning injustices locally. And I do think that rural injustices are every Brit as serious. You know, Norfolk is third off the bottom of the National Education League tables. It's because we've got a lot of small rural schools. We struggle to recruit the best teachers because not everybody wants to work in a little windy village school. We have some brilliant academies, but we have some really windy black spots. We struggle to give youngsters access to new jobs. This is the stuff we need to tackle. If we don't do that, Norfolk, I think, will begin to feel it really has been abandoned by the political class. It voted Brexit and it hasn't got the change it wanted for.
You talked there about the burning injustices. That was a phrase which Theresa May used. You have said that you think that she should step down and that somebody else should take this forward. Who should take this forward and why should she go? If she gets a deal through, surely she should be the one to carry it on.
My belief is that whoever delivers the Brexit withdrawal agreement is going to be so politically exhausted by the process, battered, bruised, will have had to use every bit of political capital to duck and dive. I regret it very much. I was a huge supporter of hers when she came to number 10 with that burning injustices speech. But I think the political reality is whoever delivers withdrawal will then have to hand over to somebody who can lead the new relationship with Europe, but also get us back onto that agenda of making Brexit a catalytic moment of renewal. You know, we lost the majority in 2017. Theresa May lost 30 MPs in England on a hard Brexit ticket. Somebody, and I think it has to be a new generation Conservative who's fired up by these injustices, who believes in this country, who's positive about a vision for this country in the 21st century. And I think we need somebody who can put the country back together.
George Freeman, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for coming.